Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, the second half of Chris Hedges' rousing speech on the corporate destruction of America and what to do. I hope you'll stay tuned. Last week, Chris Hedges spoke about the corporate takeover of America and about many of its bad effects. More of that this week, too, and some consideration of what to do. Some hints on that. For Hedges, Mr. Trump is a symptom and a result of the corporate destruction of all American institutions and values. Removing him will only get him replaced by a more skilled demagogue. Our best hope is to overthrow the corporatocracy. That's no easy task, and don't look for any help from the Democratic Party. Hedges spoke in New York City on December 9, 2018. His talk and his new book are titled America, the Farewell Tour. Here is part two.
These fines are used to fill state and county budget shortfalls resulting from corporations and the wealthy fixing the rules to avoid paying meaningful taxes, if they pay taxes at all. This virtual taxed boycott by the rich has broken yet another vital social bond, the idea that everyone contributes a significant portion of his or her income to make the society function. The elites who sacrifice nothing for society and are not held accountable for their criminal behavior live in what Matt Taibbi calls a stateless archipelago, or what a writer for The New Yorker called Richistan. They are legally empowered to pillage the nation, amass obscene wealth, and wield unchecked political and legal control. Brett Kavanaugh, aside from most probably being a sexual predator, is, as Ralph Nader has said, a corporation masquerading as a human being. The result has been the obliteration of primary social bonds that, however biased in favor of the white majority, once held the nation together. The shattering of these bonds has left tens of millions of Americans adrift. Society, Durkheim wrote, is no longer sufficiently present for individuals. Those cast aside can participate in the society, as Durkheim noted, only through sadness. The self-destructive pathologies that plague the United States, opioid addiction, morbid obesity, gambling, suicide, sexual sadism, we are a pornified culture, hate groups, mass shootings, rise out of this enemy. And my new book, America, the Farewell Tour, is an examination of these pathologies and the enemy that fuels these self-destructive behaviors. Durkheim also noted that the poor have lower rates of suicide. Because, as he wrote, the poor know that the rules are rigged against them. James Baldwin made much the same point when he wrote that African-American men are less prone to a midlife crisis than white men because they are less susceptible to the myth of the American dream. Most African-Americans learn very early in life that there are two sets of rules, one for blacks and one for whites. But white Americans, because of white supremacy, are more susceptible to the myth and therefore more infuriated when the myth is exposed as a con. This, I suspect, is why nearly all mass shootings and members of right-wing hate groups, along with a majority of supporters of Donald Trump, are white men. Capitalism, Durkheim wrote, is antithetical to creating and sustaining the relationships that are vital to social bonds. Capitalism rewards those for whom relationships are transactional and temporary. Relationships under capitalism are mercenary. They are part of the scheme for personal self-advancement and require the oily manipulation of others. To advance in a capitalist system, it is necessary to build and then discard a series of ultimately hollow relationships. These empty relationships, and you can see them on display at any business gathering, contribute to the collective enemy and disintegration of social bonds. Capitalism may cater to a natural desire among many for self-enrichment, but you don't want this greed to dominate society. Capitalism rewards single-minded narcissists and often con artists, devoid of empathy and incapable of remorse. It rewards those focused exclusively on personal gain and self-aggrandizement. Once a capitalist class achieves complete control, as it has in the United States, it dismantles the structures that make social bonds possible, seeing in them an impediment to profit. The more concentrated wealth becomes, as with corporate capitalism, the more damage it inflicts on society, sending jobs to overseas sweatshops and leaving American workers underemployed or unemployed. Trump is not the product of the leak of the Podesta emails, James Comey, or even racism, although he and many who support him are racists. Nor is he the product of Russian bots. Demagogues always arise from failed democracies, plagued by rulelessness, by anomy. They tell an enraged population what it wants to hear and crudely, to the delight of the betrayed, ridicule the elites who sold them out. Removing Trump from office without confronting the enemy that defines the lives of tens of millions of Americans would do nothing to restore democracy. In fact, it would probably consolidate the power of a Christianized fascism, rapidly filling Trump's ideological void, which cloaks itself in a cloying piety and false morality. Vice President Mike Pence, because he is a creature of the Christian right, would probably, as Noam Chomsky has pointed out, would probably be worse than Trump if he gained the presidency. This enemy, as it always does, has empowered demagogues who must be understood as cult leaders rather than traditional politicians. A disempowered population, infantilized by a world it cannot control, gravitates to cult leaders who appear omnipotent and promise a return to a mythical golden age. The cult leaders vow to crush the forces embodied in demonized groups and individuals which are blamed for their misery. The more outrageous the cult leaders become, the more they flout law and social conventions, the more they gain in popularity. Cult leaders are immune to the norms of established society. This is their appeal. Cult leaders demand a godlike power. Those who follow them grant them this power in the hope that the cult leaders will save them. Trump has transformed the decayed carcass of the Republican Party into a cult. All cults are personality cults. They are extensions of the cult leaders. The cult reflects the leader's prejudices, worldview, personal style, and ideas. Trump did not create the yearning for a cult leader. Huge segments of the population betrayed by the established elites were conditioned for a cult leader. They were desperately looking for someone to rescue them and solve their problems. They found their cult leader in the New York real estate developer and reality television show star. Only when we recognize Trump as a cult leader, and many of those who support him as cult followers, will we understand where we are headed and how we must resist. It was 40 years ago, last month, that a messianic preacher named Jim Jones convinced or forced more than 900 of his followers, including roughly 280 children, to die by ingesting a cyanide-laced drink. Trump's refusal to acknowledge and address the impending crisis of ecocide and the massive mismanagement of the economy by the kleptocrats, his bellicosity, his threats against Iran and China, his withdrawal from nuclear arms treaties, along with his demonization of all who oppose him, ensure our cultural and, if left unchecked, physical extinction. Cult leaders are driven at their core by the death instinct, the instinct to annihilate or destroy rather than nurture and create. And Trump shares many of the characteristics of Jones as well as other cult leaders, including the founders of the Heaven's Gate cult, Reverend Sun Myung Moon, who led the Unification Church, and David Koresh, who led the Branch Davidian cult in Waco, Texas. Cult leaders are narcissists. They demand obsequious, fawning, and total obedience. They prize loyalty above competence. They wield absolute control. They do not tolerate criticism. They are amoral and emotionally and physically abusive. They see those around them as objects to be manipulated for their own empowerment, enjoyment, and often sadistic entertainment. All those outside the cult are branded as forces of evil, prompting an epic battle whose natural expression is violence. A cult is a mirror of what is inside the cult leader, Margaret Singer wrote in Cults in Our Midst. He has no restraints on him. He can make his fantasies and desires come alive in the world he creates around him. He can lead people to do his bidding. He can make the surrounding world really his world. What most cult leaders achieve is akin to the fantasies of a child at play, creating a world with toys and utensils. In that play world, the child feels omnipotent and creates a realm of his or her own for a few minutes or a few hours. He moves the toy dolls about. They do his bidding. They speak his words back to him. He punishes them any way he wants. He is all powerful and makes his fantasy come alive. When I see the sand tables and the collections of toys some child therapists have in their offices, I think that a cult leader must look about and place people in his created world, much as a child creates on the sand table a world that reflects his or her desires and fantasies. The difference is that the cult leader has actual humans doing his bidding as he makes a world around him that springs from inside his own head. George Orwell understood that cult leaders manipulate followers primarily through language, not force. This linguistic manipulation is a gradual process. It is rooted in continual mental chaos and verbal confusion. Lies, conspiracy theories, outlandish ideas, and contradictory statements that defy reality and fact soon paralyze the opposition. The opposition, with every attempt to counter this absurdism with the rational, such as the decision by Barack Obama to make his birth certificate public, or by Senator Elizabeth Warren to release the results of her DNA test to prove she has Native American ancestry, only plays to the cult leader. The cult leader does not take his or her statements seriously and often denies ever making them, even when they are documented. Lies and truth do not matter. The language of the cult leader is designed exclusively to appeal to the emotional needs of those in the cult. Hitler kept his enemies in a state of constant confusion and diplomatic upheaval. Joost A.M. Merleau wrote in The Rape of the Mind, The Psychology of Thought Control, Menticide, and Brainwashing. They never knew what this unpredictable madman was going to do next. Hitler was never logical because he knew that that was what he was expected to be. Logic can be met with logic, while illogic cannot. It confuses those who think straight. The big lie and monotonously repeated nonsense have more emotional appeal in a Cold War than logic and reason. While the enemy is still searching for a reasonable counterargument to the first lie, the totalitarians can assault him with another. Cult leaders engage in the permanent lie. The permanent lie is different from the falsehood and half-truths uttered by politicians such as Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, or Barack Obama. The common political lie these politicians employed was not designed to cancel out reality. It was a form of manipulation. Clinton, when he signed into law the North American Free Trade Agreement, promised, and I'm quoting, "NAFTA means jobs, American jobs, and good-paying American jobs." George W. Bush justified the invasion of Iraq because Saddam Hussein supposedly possessed weapons of mass destruction. But Clinton does not continue to pretend that NAFTA is beneficial to the working class, since reality has proved otherwise. Bush does not pretend that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Once it was clear, none were found. The permanent lie, however, is not circumscribed by reality. It is perpetuated even in the face of overwhelming evidence that discredits it. It is irrational. Those who speak in the language of truth and fact are attacked as liars, traitors, and purveyors of fake news. They are banished from the public sphere once totalitarian elites accrue sufficient power. The iron refusal by those who engage in the permanent lie to acknowledge reality, no matter how transparent reality becomes, creates collective psychosis. The result of a consistent and total substitution of lies for factual truth is not that the lie will now be accepted as truth and truth be defamed as a lie, but that the sense by which we take our bearings in the real world and the category of truth versus falsehood is among the mental means to this end is being destroyed, Hannah Arendt wrote in The Origins of Totalitarianism. The permanent lie is the apotheosis of totalitarianism. It no longer matters what is true. It matters only what is correct. And federal courts are being stacked with Federalist Society judges who served the correct ideology of corporatism and the rigid social mores of the Christian right. They hold reality, including science and the rule of law, in contempt. They seek to banish those who live in a reality-based world defined by intellectual and moral autonomy. Consistency is discarded. Complexity, nuance, depth, and profundity are replaced with the simpleton's belief in threats and force. And this is why the Trump administration disdains diplomacy and has dynamited the State Department. Totalitarianism, wrote the novelist and social critic Thomas Mann, is at its core the desire for a simple folktale. Once this folktale replaces reality, morality and ethics are abolished. And as Voltaire reminded us, those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. The cult leader grooms followers to speak in the language of hate and violence. The cult leader constantly paints a picture of an existential threat, often invented, such as the caravan, that puts cult followers in danger. The 4,000 immigrants, most from Honduras, in southern Mexico, are in fact nothing new. Caravans of immigrants have been with us for several years. The beleaguered and impoverished asylum seekers, including many families with children, have made that journey from Honduras up through Mexico many times before. But Trump, aided by nearly nonstop coverage by Fox News and Christian broadcasting, used the caravan during the elections to terrify his followers. Just as he, along with the same media outlets, portrayed the protesters who flooded the U.S. Capitol to oppose the nomination of Kavanaugh, were portrayed as unruly mobs. Trump claims the Democrats want to open the border to these quote-unquote criminals and to, quote, unknown Middle Eastern terrorists. Christian broadcasting, such as Pat Robertson's 700 Club, was splicing pictures of marching jihadists in black uniforms cradling automatic weapons into video shots of the caravan of migrants. The fear-mongering and rhetoric of hate and violence, as I saw in the former Yugoslavia, eventually leads to acts of violence against those the cult leader defines as the enemy. The 13 explosive devices sent to Trump critics and leaders of the Democratic Party, including Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, George Soros, James Clapper, and CNN, allegedly by Cesar Sayoc, an ex-stripper and fanatic Trump supporter who was living out of his van, heralds more violence. And Trump, tossing gasoline on the flames, used that assault against most of the leadership of the Democratic Party to attack the press, or as he calls it, the enemy of the people. And it should come as no surprise that another enraged American white male, his fury and despair, seemingly stoked by the diatribes and conspiracy theories of the far right, entered a Pittsburgh synagogue and massacred 8 men and 3 women as he shouted anti-Semitic abuse. The proliferation of easily accessible, high-caliber weapons, coupled with the division of the country into the blessed and the damned by Trump and his fellow cultists, threatens to turn the landscape into one that resembles Mexico, where at least 145 people in politics, including 48 candidates and pre-candidates, along with party leaders and campaign workers, have been assassinated over the last 12 months. Look south if you want a vision of the future. The cult leader, unlike a traditional politician, makes no effort to reach out to his opponents. The cult leader seeks to widen the divisions. The cult leader brands those outside the cult as irredeemable. The cult leader seeks the omnipotence to crush those who do not kneel in adoration. The followers yearning to be protected and empowered by the cult leader seek to give the cult leader unlimited power. Democratic norms and impediment to the leader's omnipotence are ridiculed, attacked, and abolished. Those in the cult seek to be surrounded by the cult leader's magical aura. Reality is sacrificed for fantasy. Those who challenge the fantasies are not considered human. They are satanic. Behavior that ensures the destruction of a public figure's career does not affect a cult leader. It does not matter how many lies uttered by Trump are meticulously documented by the New York Times or the Washington Post. It does not matter that Trump's personal financial interests, as we see in his relationship with the Saudis, takes precedent over the rule of law, diplomatic protocols, and national security. It does not matter that he is credibly charged by numerous women with being a sexual predator, a common characteristic of cult leaders. It does not matter that he paid little or no income taxes and routinely committed financial fraud. It does not matter that he is inept, lazy, and ignorant. The establishment whose credibility has been destroyed because of its complicity in empowering the ruling oligarchy and the corporate state might as well be blowing soap bubbles at Trump. Their vitriol to his followers only justifies the hatred radiating from the cult. The removal of Trump from power would not remove the yearning of tens of millions of Americans, many conditioned by the Christian right, for a cult leader. Most of the leaders of the Christian right have built cult followings of their own. These Christian fascists embraced magical thinking, attacked their enemies as agents of Satan, and denounced reality-based science and journalism long before Trump. Cults are a product of social decay, of anomie, and our decay and despair are expanding, soon to explode in another financial crisis. The efforts by the Democratic Party and much of the press, including CNN and the New York Times, to discredit Trump as if our problems are embodied in him alone are futile. The smug self-righteousness of this crusade against Trump only contributes to the national reality television show that has replaced journalism and politics. This crusade attempts to reduce a social, economic, and political crisis to the personality of Trump. It is accompanied by a refusal to confront and name the corporate forces responsible for our failed democracy and growing social inequality. This collusion with the forces of corporate domination neuters the press and Trump's mainstream Democratic critics. Our only hope is to organize the overthrow of the corporate state that vomited up Trump. Our democratic institutions, including the legislative bodies, the courts, and the media, are hostage to corporate power. They are no longer democratic. We must, like liberation movements of the past, engage in sustained mass civil disobedience and non-cooperation as we are seeing today on the streets of Paris. By turning our ire on the corporate state, we name the true sources of power and abuse. We expose the absurdity of blaming our demise on demonized groups such as undocumented workers, Muslims, African Americans, Latinos, liberals, feminists, gays, and others. We give people an alternative to a Democratic Party that refuses to confront the corporate forces of oppression and cannot be rehabilitated. We make possible the restoration of an open society. If we fail to embrace this militancy, which alone has the ability to destroy cult leaders, we will continue the march toward tyranny. Thank you.
Chris Hedges, concluding his rousing talk, America, the Farewell Tour, from December 2018. Many thanks to Wilton Vaught of Other Voices, Other Choices for re-engineering the audio. I have condensed part two just a little. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening to New World Notes. newworldnotes.blogspot.com. It'll get to my non-carborundum, and please come back again next week. Peace.